Hi, everybody. This is Tracy, and boy, do I have a very special guest for you today. Today, I've got Delaney Kay. Now, you might not know who Delaney Kay is, but you probably do know Daylight Out of Darkness YouTube channel. She has been making YouTubes about narcissist abuse for about 3 years. And when I was first learning about it, she was one of the people. And it's amazing to watch how she has evolved in her growth. Same thing if you went back and looked at my videos. I was very shy. I was very meek. I was scared. I didn't know what the hell hit me. It's a bus, right? You have that too, right? But Delaney has just been such an inspiration to all of us. She had a horrific divorce from her husband, child alienation issues, and she's been so wonderful sharing this information with us. So let's give a warm welcome to Delaney from Daylight Out of Darkness. Welcome.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here. And really, it's amazing. It's great to get together with other survivors and thrivers, and I am so happy to be here.
Well, thank you. You don't need any introduction because I know you have been doing this since 2015 and the recovery community knows all about you. Her channel is Daylight Out of Darkness, for those of you who don't know. And Delaney went through a painful and pretty bad divorce with a narcissist. Do you want to tell us about that a little bit?
Sure. I was married to a narcissist for 17 years.
Wow.
I didn't know that this person was a narcissist. But and many of those years, I was in an emotional cage because my self-esteem had been so badly drained that I didn't believe that I could survive on my own. And I also didn't know what was going on. So, I had no idea. I'd keep typing into the internet, why is this happening? And it would be about my life. Why was my life falling apart? I didn't understand. And I'd keep typing stuff in because I knew that something someday would come up. And, you know, I'd tried everything and I'd come up with different concepts. I'd even at one stage thought that he might have Asperger's, because he wouldn't look me in the eye. He would look up at the ceiling. He would look out the window. He would look down at the floor when he was talking to me. Mm-hmm. And at one stage, I was sort of coming to the conclusion that he had Asperger's, but then I realized there was a lot more going on. And it turned out it wasn't Asperger's. It was narcissism.
Wow. Yeah. And that's the fine line, because a lot of survivors, or when they're in the victim stage, are trying to figure out. So you're going through the Asperger's, you're going through the, you know, the controlling and all of the other possibilities of what they might be, you know, bipolar. And there's just so many things that come up to try to explain, and they cross over. There's a very big cluster B crossover to narcissism. And I think that we just don't know what we're dealing with until we know. And I know so many people have been blessed with you sharing your story, and that helps all of us, because now there is an answer. When someone Googles in the same things you were checking, they're finding you and they're finding me and they're finding all of the other people that are out here. And we're compassionate, empathic people that want to give back. We've always been this way, probably, that we want to help. And so this is just another layer. And I think that what you've been doing has been so helpful to people. When you're thinking about your divorce, didn't he turn your family against you?
Yes. That's exactly what happened. So my family of origin are in South Africa, and I was living in the United States. And this was when I realized what was really going on with him. I realized that he was narcissistic, because I'd come up with all this information, and I just knew it. This is what's going on. And because I was so naive, I kind of confronted him with this. I said, hey, well, this is what's going on. In my naivety, I just thought, you know, maybe there's a way he can change.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually started, he went into the decompensation. You know, he was, they go into like a delusional state when they realize that they're losing their grip, and they become very extreme, and they become, their behaviors become very, they can do a lot of damage to you. And so his behavior had become much worse. So I became frantic in that. And I was trying to tell my parents what was going on. And obviously I was, as they weren't listening to me, I was becoming more and more frantic. And he was emailing and phoning my parents behind my back and saying that there was something psychologically wrong with me. I was seeing a psychiatrist at the time because I actually have ADHD. Just due to the emotional environment I found myself in, I was seeing a psychologist. And so he was making out to my family of origin that he was very concerned about me and that there was something psychologically wrong with me. And they chose to believe him. And he actually went as far as to get my father and my sister to write emails to my psychiatrist and my psychologist, telling them that they were very worried about my emotional condition and that they thought that I might be a danger to my children.
Wow. Oh my gosh. So basically he was turning the tables on you, on everything he was doing. Only they're smart enough to know that. Was this after you called him out on making him saying he was a narcissist?
It was.
Yeah.
I thought maybe if I showed him videos on the behaviors, and I think that he actually did, he did realize that he was narcissistic.
Wow.
See that recognition in his eyes. And on occasions he'd said, I might be narcissistic. So there was a recognition, but it obviously became so frightening for him. And because he's a very high level executive, very, very smart, and he had this manipulation down to a fine art, he actually managed to convince other people as well that there was something psychologically wrong with me, which was very, very scary, because I knew, I mean, they were talking about trying to get me into some sort of psychiatric hospital, that type of thing. I knew that if I landed up in a psychiatric hospital and my parents and everybody was saying there was something wrong with me, there's a good chance the doctors would believe them. And then no one would ever believe anything I said again after that, because they would think that there was something wrong with me psychologically.
So how did you get through that? I mean, your family wants to commit you. He's going around and smearing your name. How did you not end up in the mental hospital?
Well, I did realize that what was going on was wrong. The one way that I did realize that is that I have certain people that I would say, well, what would they do? What would they think in this situation? It would be like Dr. Phil and Oprah. And I'd say, well, if Dr. Phil heard this, what would he say? So I would follow that intuition. And I also realized that I was in a very bad situation. So I knew that what was very important was information. I made sure that I knew what he was doing. I knew what he was saying. So I knew what was going on. Plus I also got in touch with Ben Littling, who has a YouTube channel or a business called Bullies Be Gone.
Mm-hmm.
He was Skype talking me through some of these manipulations, because I also thought, well, at least somebody knows that I'm sane, because it was like I didn't have anybody who believed me at that stage. And so he was telling me to be calm and things like that, which was very, very helpful. And thankfully, the psychiatrist and the psychologist, they, for whatever reason, they didn't believe what my father and my sister were saying. So I managed to convince them that this was not correct. But I don't think this is the case. I think other people have ended up in psychiatric hospitals, and that because of exactly the same situation. So it is a very, very scary scenario.
It is. Well, first of all, he isolated you. You were across the world from your family. And then on top of that, that's your foundation and your support system. And he's gone after it and now turned them, smeared you, lied. And then they, out of concern, start to like, okay, we've got to get her help. Her husband's telling us, we, you know, she needs help. But he's manufactured this whole big thing. And did that make the divorce harder? Was he like calling crazy in the divorce? Or
it made the divorce so much harder, because then he would, in the court, he would say that my parents also agreed with him, and he was trying to take out letters that my father had sent him. And so plus the other fact is that I realized that my father was also narcissistic. It was in my father's interest to keep the marriage together, because my father was gaining narcissistic supply because of my husband's position, because it was like, this is my son-in-law, so high up. And so he didn't want the marriage to end.
Wow.
No matter what, no matter the pain it was causing me. He in fact told me that one bruise was not enough to end a marriage.
Wow.
After I told him everything else.
Uh-huh.
And I showed him that the narcissist had thrown a Windex bottle at me, and I had this massive bruise on my arm. And I showed him the picture, and that's when he just said to me, one bruise is not enough to end a marriage. And I was like, yeah, well, I wonder what Dr. Phil would say to this. That was the only thing that kept me sane. It's like, I'm not insane, because Dr. Phil would also think this was ridiculous. How can a father say that to his daughter?
Yeah, exactly. That's the crazy part. My ex-husband, and I don't know who tried, but he talked to my little sister during the divorce, and she promised to testify against me in court for the divorce. And she was at that point a rock for me. And we've since gone no contact, but I don't know if it was him doing it or if it was her initiating it, but whatever it was isolation. Let's get them away from their support system. And then, you know, all of the smears and the terrible things that they do during the divorce. What other kind of tricks did he pull during the divorce, so we can share that with other people so they can be aware?
Well, also he isolated me from my neighbors and my friends. He was suddenly very into helping the neighbors, and this had been for a long time. You know, he put on this act, and now I know that he would say really good things about me to other people. Mm-hmm. But then he would hint at there was something psychologically wrong with me. So when all of this happened, and I went to, if I said to my neighbor, I was looking for support, hey, this is what's happening. And he had said, oh, he loves me so much and he's so concerned about me, but psychologically there's something really wrong. The neighbor's going to believe him, not me, because I didn't know that tactic.
Mm-hmm.
He would set up situations, like he got a brand new Mercedes sports car convertible, and he told me that he wanted to go through to Charleston for the weekend to drive this car in and take it on a road trip. And this was just before we split apart, which was in 2013. So I said, okay, you know, he asked me to go along with him. So we went away for the weekend to Charleston, which was a really awful weekend. He treated me really badly in that. But then he used it later in court to say, look, he tried at the marriage and he was so wonderful. He tried everything. He would also do things like putting together a very generous package if he bought over our house, the sort of marital home, and putting it all out in a spreadsheet and emailing it to me. And then after that, a day later, saying, sorry, he'd made a mistake, he couldn't do that. And then presenting that later in court to show what a generous person he was. So he wasn't meaning to do that at all, but he was putting it out as evidence. And this shows how the narcissist, they're thinking so far ahead, and they will catch you out in things. They will do nice things and then show it off to other people later on. He totally smeared my name in the courts. He said that I went on expensive safari trips, when it actually turned out that my sister was the manager of a safari lodge on the Serengeti and I got the free nights to go there. But then the attorneys, who were just as duped as everybody else, I was saying, hey, but you know, he's lying. And they said, well, the judge wouldn't be worried about that. She's only worried about the facts. So they didn't even, state that the stuff that he put into these complaints and that was wrong, because they said that the judge wouldn't be concerned with that. She would only be concerned with the facts.
But he tried.
Well, he did it. And I do believe that the judge was biased because of the picture that he painted about me.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the attorneys, they just thought that that was okay, that we could just leave that stuff. We didn't need to defend ourselves.
Right. My ex-mother-in-law, during the divorce, she was playing, and she's like the queen of narcissists or psychopaths. She's above like a normal manipulator. And she was playing like I was still her daughter. How could my husband do this? She was calling me and, you know, giving me pep talks. And I was in shock when I found out that he wanted a divorce, because I didn't know. This was never even like I thought we had a problem. I look back now and I see the flags, but I didn't then. And so my son had just graduated from high school and was leaving for college. And we had sold our marital house and he asked for a divorce. And all of this was happening all at once. And he was leaving for college in a month. And she's just like, you know, I'm really worried about him. I think you should take a long vacation, just the two of you, because he's only seen you in this like trauma thing, you know, since this all began. So why don't you go to Europe for like a few weeks and just like do something? And there's plenty of money to do that. So go on a trip and, you know, take care of him. And you know, she was like pushing this on me. And I wasn't really in a state to do anything like that. So a friend of mine helped me plan a trip to Mexico. It was an all-inclusive $1,100 for two of us for a week. It was like what she was planning and wanting me to do was up here. And I was like, okay, I'll take him away and I'll give him a little mommy time before he goes off and doesn't feel abandoned. And by God, they used that in court.
Exactly.
She's out there taking all these wild vacations. Look how she's spending all this money. And I was like, she's the one who made me do it.
Exactly the same thing. So, you know, that's what people need to be very aware of is that if they're offering you anything, if they're being nice to you or kind to you, and it goes with the family. If you're dealing with a narcissist, there's a good chance that the other people in the family are also narcissistic. So be suspicious. I can't believe that exact same thing happened to you.
Exactly the same thing. And I mean, just everything. He was the spendaholic. This man would buy just piles of clothes and, you know, just all of these things. And he was the spend guy. I was the one looking at the, you know, the toll booth receipt and going, you know, you didn't go through that airport. Like that's got to come off. And I'll call them for $3 and go, there's something wrong here. My husband wasn't in town that week. And how could his car go through the toll for $3? I was that girl. He hated it if I tried to use coupons or anything like that. His mantra was, why pay less? That's what he said. And I'm in the spend there. And then they're in court accusing me of, like, you know, running up debt and all of these things. And I was like, no, but they just kept on trying. And it was everything he had done I was now being accused of.
Yeah, that's what I found is that, I mean, it was such a surreal experience because whatever I was saying to him, he was saying it back to me. And I'm like, what you're saying is you. And now you're saying it's me. And it was just, it was overwhelming. And it was, I don't know, I felt like I was in a horror movie. I felt like, oh, this isn't real. This isn't the real world. How can this be? Because there's no knowledge out there of the pathological brain. And this is the problem, is that society is not being told what these pathological brains are like. So when you come up against this type of experience, it's, you almost feel like you're in the delusion, or you're in a dream or something.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem real. One of my clients told me a few weeks ago to watch Sleeping with the Enemy.
Oh, I love that movie.
And I had seen it when it first came out, and I remember it as a horror movie. It was, you know, back in the 70s or 80s. I don't know. It's an old movie. And I watched it again like 2 weeks ago, and I just sat there with a pad. I would pause it and go, oh my God, he just gaslighted her. Oh my God, he's doing this. He's like, I watched his mind control. It was the best example, now that I know about this, to go,
and watch it.
Holy shit. That's, I mean, I stopped at like 3 pages and I was like 10 minutes in. I was like, this is too much stuff. I'm like, the whole movie was the psychological abuse, and it was so well done that unless you were looking for that, like when I watched it so many years ago, it was just like a horror movie. Oh God, her husband's crazy. Now I'm like watching him and everything that he did, and it was so on par with everything that our survivors deal with, and us.
It's so scary. And you know what's so scary is when you don't know about it, it's like you don't have any tools to even deal with it or even see it.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I know I was seeing a therapist during the divorce, the beginning. And by the way, 3 days from now, I will be divorced 5 years.
Wow, congratulations.
I know. It's kind of sad because I won't be getting any more alimony, but it's like, it's just this freeing feeling that there's no connection there. But I just like, we don't have the tools. And when they start reverse projecting on us, and we're wounded, and we're in shock, and we're fighting for our life, like, this is a person you slept with and you've lived with for 17 years. How can this be happening? So you're like, there's no way to process this. And my therapist didn't know what it was. He didn't know what a narcissist was. And that hurt me a lot in the end, because for 4 years, I was in therapy with him and he never saw it. And when I asked him what the narcissist was, he said, they look in the mirror.
What most of the public thinks a narcissist is, the main narcissists in my life, none of them have been very vain. That's actually not their thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's been other stuff. So when people say that to me, I'm like, no.
Yeah.
I'm sure you do get somatic narcissists that are like that, but the cerebral type narcissists are not like that at all.
No. And nor are the coverts. I mean, everyone in the world thought we were the perfect couple. we were on the surface. I mean, he was so doting and loving and caring and charming that no one would ever have known all of the secret things that were going on. I didn't know the secret things that were going on that were manipulations. So I think that the covert, the overt, the cerebral, there's so many different levels. And so we can't just generalize them that they're all crazy. You know?
I'd had another narcissist. I realize now as a teenager, I went out with another type of narcissist. And in fact, when I was marrying my husband, I was making sure that I was going out with the opposite personality to what he had been.
Mm-hmm.
I ended up being a somatic narcissist. My husband is cerebral, although he would go, but they were totally opposite in almost every way. So I thought I was doing the good thing because I know it had problems with him. So now I was picking the total opposites. But you know, maybe that's it. When you're going for people that have extreme behaviors on either side, that's where it gets a bit scary. You need to like stick with people that are more in the middle.
Yeah, I think that's the case too. And I think a lot of times we try to not just make the same mistake, but like there's a lot of like, I don't want that. When I had gotten divorced from my husband 5 years ago, I was still in divorce shock. I was reeling. I was in depression. I was just a mess. I wanted to kill myself. I actually took a box cutter to my wrist one night and said, I want to end it. And I called my therapist, and that was something he did very well. He's like, what happens when your kid gets home and finds you? And I was like, oh yeah, I hadn't thought about that, you know. But all of that you go through this whole mind fuckery, as I call it, that you just don't know where you're going. And I don't know. We all have so much to learn. And I think that what you're doing, I know what I'm doing is helping. And there's so many people that we can help because there's not a lot of knowledge. Have you found that in other countries, the people that listen to your channel are saying there's nothing here in South Africa or England? I get that a lot.
Well, there's nothing even in the United States. I guess it's getting a bit more now where we have like, I know that here in Charlotte, we had a meetup that was for narcissistic abuse survivors. There's a few Facebook groups, but we still do not have many resources. And yes, in countries like South Africa, and I think England, I mean, that might be a bit better than some of the other countries, but I think it's really lacking all over the world. And this is an epidemic. This needs to be mainstream because there are a lot of people that are suffering. There are a lot of people that will go through their entire lives suffering and thinking it's them. And it's a narcissist. It's narcissists around them that are doing this, but they don't understand the pathological personality, so they have no way of seeing it.
Right.
So we are the lucky ones.
Yeah. I think we are. And I think everyone can be if they don't rush the recovery. You know, I've talked to people that, you know, 3 months later, they're like, okay, I'm ready to date again. And I'm like, that could be bad. You know, let's talk about that. And so, Delaney, tell me about how it was to co-parent during all of this, because that's not easy.
Well, I will tell you, first of all, that my children were turned against me as well.
Oh.
Parental alienation syndrome, which is when the narcissist becomes delusional, when he goes through the smear campaign and he becomes delusional, he will actually, and there's a Dr. Craig Childress that explains this exactly in California. He will actually, by his fear tactics, he will say things like, so what did you do at your mother's place? And if the child says, oh, she got me to clean out the dishwasher. He's like, oh, she got you to clean out the dishwasher. So he puts into the child a feeling of that they are the victim.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually severs the bond, the mother-child or the father-child bond. And then the child then starts to take on the behaviors of the narcissist. So the children become belligerent and they are condescending. And you will also see that the child starts to act in a way that they are the parent and the parent is the child. So they're kind of looking down on the parent and all of that. And this is the delusion that is being caused by the narcissist.
Wow.
So I started off with that. And, you know, what I read up on it to begin with in that, they were saying, oh, just leave your children. They will come back. And then I had this internal gauge that I followed. And that was saying to me, this is not right. So I basically told my children what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why you are being like this to me. Why would you be like this? And then as I learned more, and this Dr. Craig Childress, he actually has some videos. He has about, I don't know, it's about 5 or 10 videos for the children to listen to if they're older children.
Oh,
and
wow.
Explains to them in a very gentle, kind way that these types of things happen. Because for a bond between a child and a parent to be broken, even because he even went through the foster care, and for a bond for a child and a parent to be broken, even with really bad parents that are in prison, that never happens unless there's a coalition, a cross-generational enmeshment between the child and the pathological parent. And then the child starts to exhibit these narcissistic traits towards the other parent. So, so I had to deal with that. And then it just became impossible. I cannot communicate with him. My children have just had to grow up and realize what the situation is. And actually, as I found, so luckily I got them to realize what was really going on. And yes, they have experienced damage. There is emotional damage. My son has anxiety. My daughter's had issues as well. But as my healing has improved inside, I've seen that my children have also got better. And my relationships with my own children have improved as well.
Wow, that's like exactly what happens with so many children, that the narcissist turns whether it's a male or a female, they turn against the other parent and they become the flying monkeys, right? Because then they start acting out and bringing the message from the narcissist home after the weekend. And I know that is so hard. I had a friend who he was a physical abuser to her, and he smeared her and said she was an alcoholic, which is the normal, one of the normal checklists for them to call us. And she lost her children. She hasn't seen her kids in 5 years. Meanwhile, he had been beating her, and they just think that she is just this horrible person who never loved them, because that's what daddy convinced them of.
Yeah. And they will even, the narcissist can actually make them believe false things that happen to them by the other parent.
Mm-hmm.
And they totally believe it.
Oh, yeah.
Even pass a lie detector test. It's so sad.
Now, did yours use tears? Because my 3X, the boyfriend after the marriage, he used tears like to get his way. He used tears against his children to manipulate them. Crying is a big thing that people should really be aware of, that that's not normal.
Yes. And he did use tears. And he did use tears with the children. I think it worked better with the children. With me, I could see through the tears straight away. I was like, those are crocodile tears. Just, I can see through you. But you see, this is the thing with the narcissist, is that they are like chameleons.
Mm-hmm.
So they will see what works for you where they can. So he shut that off because he realized it wasn't working for me. But then take other positions that were very effective with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they like throw stuff at the wall and test it.
Yes.
And they're seeing, okay, that worked. And they actually have been doing this the entire relationship.
Yes.
They're seeing, will she take care of the kids in the house and do all this work and there and get little from me? And they start to slowly take away from you and dump more on you. But it's all a test. If it doesn't work, if you don't lend the money, they don't ask again. You know, it's whatever people can get away with that they say, oh, that's a button. Let's check that. I can get money out of her. I can get this. I can do that. And people have to be really aware that doing these overextended things to someone, again, unless they're reciprocating, that should be a flag to us that, you know, I was watching 3X's kid. I was packing his house. I was doing all these things. And then if my car broke down or I called him up, you know, crickets. And so it's a fair equal distribution of doing things together. And as soon as it becomes unfair, that's when they gain control, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you were looking at someone going through a divorce, what is like the key piece of information that you can give now that you've got 3 years under your belt of knowing, learning, and teaching this? What would you say are the most important things for someone to know when they're going through a divorce?
You have to keep your calm. You have to put on an act. You have to remain, you don't feed the narcissist in any way. You have to remain neutral. Don't be over nice to them. Don't be like you're depressed and sulking either. You just have to remain neutral. Don't show your cards. If you're going to leave them, don't show them that you're going to leave them. Just be very calm and neutral so that they cannot read you. And get your affairs in order, in quiet. And also when you're explaining it to other people, what's happening, don't become hysterical. Also, when you're talking about the narcissist, remember to put in all the little good things about them first before you say anything bad about them, in case that they've been, the narcissist has been talking to them first. And just realize that you're in for a hell of a journey. And realize if you've been with the narcissist for quite a while or you have dysfunctional childhood in that, you have a lot of internal damage. So I would say your internal healing is paramount as well.
Yeah. And just, I think, preparing for battle is a really, for me, I didn't know to prepare for battle. I didn't know I would have 7 trials in my divorce. I didn't know that, like, I had gone through a divorce with my son's father. You know, we signed the papers in the courtroom. That was it. I didn't have trials. I didn't have depositions. I didn't have the lies and the accusations that they kept on trying one after another because they were trying to see what stuck. It's the same thing we just talked about. And if you prepare mentally in your mind and you get all those papers together and you have the facts, then you are in a much better place. Because without any facts, without financials and things like that, they're going to walk all over you. So get all that stuff out of the house as fast as you can. You know, get it to your lawyer, get it to your friend or your mother's house and prepare for battle. If it doesn't turn into a battle.
And you know, I actually did prepare. But the thing that I didn't realize is that firstly, the court is not always fair.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the courts don't understand narcissists and they are swayed by the narcissist as well. And the attorneys, most of the attorneys don't understand narcissistic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you've got to realize that things could turn out badly even if you do all that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But if you remain calm and there's a lot of this stuff that that they won't be able to stick on you if you act, you know, this perfect persona. And I mean, it's going to be a total act because most of us are an absolute basket case by the time we get to that.
Yeah.
I'm hoping as, you know, this knowledge gets out more and more, the courts are going to start to change. But in my case, I mean, I went all the way to court, right? Everything went to court. And yeah, there's no understanding.
Yeah, there's no closure to it except to understand and kind of find a little bit of accountability. And sometimes it's just the accountability that we stayed and we let them do the things that they did, verbally abuse us or financially abuse us in some cases. That's accountability. And when you start to feel that, you actually feel empowered that, oh yeah, I did let them do that. And it's not like you've did something wrong. You've just got to understand where your part is, or you go into the next relationship. For me, out of the divorce into the really cray cray one, I didn't understand what had happened the first time. So take time to heal in between too, I think is really important.
And also to get out of the victim mentality, because we think if we ask, oh, for me, look what's happened. And I mean, you've got every right to, because it was a terrible experience. It was awful. I mean, it was like the end of my life. It was like awful. But if you, that victim mentality, firstly, it freezes you up. You feel like you have learned helplessness. You can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And other people don't respond well, whether it be right, wrong, or indifferent. Other people don't respond well to a victim mentality. Firstly, it makes them overwhelmed because they're like, oh, I could keep myself up. I don't have enough energy to hold someone else up.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the courts like to see that you are trying for yourself, you're trying to pull stuff right, and that so you need to show that. Don't just act like a poor little me, look what's happened, because that doesn't go down well.
No, it really doesn't. They really want the facts. In the end, that's all the judge cares about. All this, he cheated, he did this, he did that, blah, 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 you know, the judge has got to turn that off, because it's not admissible in court in the United States, usually, that they cheated or something like that. But if you're just the victim, oh my God, he cheated, you know, if you're just the calm, go to court, they're going to favor one or the other based on what they're seeing. So if you go in there acting crazy and hysterical, they're going to think the lies they told about you or will tell are true. So don't give the judge that ammunition.
Yeah. But I mean, judges, they can be biased. They're human beings as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, the more you show this calm demeanor, it's going to reflect better on you. So I think that if we act like, well, we've had such a terrible time, then the judge is going to feel sorry for us and come to our aid. That doesn't happen usually.
No. What, in my case, my husband was in contempt of court 6 times of the 7 trials. And it pissed off the judge. Like one time after another, he'd be madder and madder. So when it came time for him to say, okay, here's what I'm giving her, he's like, you know, I have a scale. I can say 10% or I can say 60%. And he's like, you were an asshole. So he didn't say that word, but he was basically implying it. You know, I see right through you, he said, and he gave it in my favor. So if there's just that little bit of favoritism, they're looking at what they've witnessed. And by being non-compliant with everything that the judge asked for, you're pissing him off. So, you know, go the other way and be the high road.
Pleasure for you that he did that.
Yeah, I know. It's like, who knew? At the time, I was just like, how can he get away with this? I don't understand.
Jesus would have done that. He was to, I mean, that's his whole thing, was to be this perfect person. So,
Yeah, the perfect neighbor, the perfect father, the role that they play.
Everything.
Yeah, exactly. So I really love talking to you. This has been so much fun because you were such an integral part of me healing and watching you evolve. After we talked last week, I went back and I watched your first video, and you were a deer in the headlights. And I went back then and watched my first video, and I was like, so was I. I just said, I'm going to grab my computer and I'm going to talk about what I learned. And, you know, my early videos, when people like make a comment now, I go, yeah, I kind of didn't know that wasn't real, but you know, you make mistakes, but you've been doing this for 3 years. So what's next for you? You're going to write a book. I know that you're coaching now, and that's really helpful.
Coaching. Yes. Mm-hmm. Now. And, it's also been very, very interesting learning a lot from that. And yes, I'm in the early stages of writing a book. It's going to be something totally different to what's out there at the moment. I don't want to go into too much detail on that, though. But definitely those types of things are in the works now. And I'm very, very excited about it, putting a lot of different thought into it and just trying to get out something out there that's going to be very, very helpful to people.
And I see that about you. And so if we both look at this horrific situation that we were in and this terrible divorce, which is now just a chapter in our life, having this experience has not only changed us for ourselves, but it has changed us and changed our path. I just feel like this is a calling. I'm going to tell the world about this, just like those little Parklands kids are going to get out there and tell the world. I'm going to tell the world, and I know that this is a blessing, and coming through it is something that I should be grateful for.
And that's the truth. I felt like I went through a dark night of the soul. Mm-hmm. The thing with things that are very, very painful in that, there's always a silver lining. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that silver lining can be very, very big. And I believe that it has been in my life. It's imparted so much knowledge. And I'm grateful for, I can't say that I would want to go through it again, but I am grateful for the experiences I've had and for the amount of growth that this type of extreme pain can cause. Mm-hmm. And I'm grateful for all the people that I'm getting to meet, like you and all the wonderful, because I realize that these are the true people. These are the real amazing people, are the survivors. They're usually the strong empaths. They are the genuine people. They're the givers. It's an incredible, incredible community. So, I mean, it's almost in a way, it's kind of a blessing to be part of this, although it comes with its bad sides. But I'm very excited about the future, and I think that this thing is going to snowball because it is an epidemic.
Yeah, I know. If you go to the World Narcissist Abuse Day website, which is June 1st, it says that there are 152 million victims of narcissist abuse in the United States. That's half of our population. That's crazy, but it's true. And I think if you look at people will say, I've said this number at my meetup groups before, and people are like, that's impossible. Fact check that, you know? And if you look at it, one narcissist does not just affect you or I, they affect their children. They've got people they work with. They spread their poison everywhere. So that number is quite possible that it's...
And it's not the, what is the normal number they give is like 1 to 3 in 100. But that would be the narcissists that actually come forward and say, hey, I'm a narcissist. And how do the narcissists actually do that?
Exactly.
But the numbers are much, much higher. And it's just that psychology has taken a little while to catch up on this type of thing. I think things are changing, but I think that things are going to change very soon. This is going to be a revolution.
Yeah. And we're on the wave. We're there. Now, we didn't like do this. People think all the time, like, oh, you're just doing this to make money now and coach people. And I'm like, no, I've been coaching people for 2.5 years and I haven't asked for any money. And I have like I'm taking time away from my job and my money to pay my rent. So it's not that we intended to go and make money, but we have reached a point where we can help people. And so, you know, that's a fair thing. And so I know that we will help a lot of people, and our YouTubes have already. So thank you so much for joining me today. And I look forward to talking with you again. Okay.
Look forward to talking to you soon.
Thank you.